Hit it.
So yeah, maybe besides the top article on New International Mag, Ian Varn's The Undying Appeal of Brunch, what are some other articles that people should check out? You want to like go down the list? I
mean, all of the articles are good. My
no skips.
Redeeming Oblivion piece about the Mohawk mothers is very interesting because this is a
friend of the show,
that,
Phil Blauen.
Yeah, friend of the show, Philippe. Yeah, so the Mohawk mothers is basically, people are probably familiar with the whole Indian school reservation thing in Canada, where people, a residential school, where kids were essentially like disappeared. And it's really sad, the whole story. But what's interesting politically about this moment is that there's a group of mothers from the Mohawk reservations in Quebec that are mobilizing to sort of politically push this issue. And it's like, no, you need to recognize the fact that these people existed, because a lot of them have been even written out of history, right? And so for me, that's a really interesting way in which questions of memory and like difference within society get hashed out in a political frame that is, for me, really inspiring. And I, you know, fully support the mothers, and Philip's work with them, I think, is really good. There are a lot of pieces up there right now. We're going to have more pieces coming out. People should wait for my Jaurès piece, which will kind of expose Jean Jaurès in English, because he's not as well translated and as known as some other figures. There is a piece, we talked about the Maloney piece. My friend Ellie wrote a piece about Edward Said. My friend Keanu wrote a piece about the sort of Iranian, did you see this like Iranian protest with the lady in her underwear?
Yeah.
So basically Keanu takes that as a starting point and talks about how the Iranian diaspora conceives of itself vis-a-vis Iranian politics, like in an ongoing way, which I thought was interesting, because, you know, questions of diaspora are obviously very pertinent today. I mean, what else is on there that I didn't talk about?
Well, there's about one I thought might be a good transition to talking a little bit more about Christianity, which is a piece by...
Oh, by Christina, about erasing the pregnant. Basically, she's looking at the U.S. anti-abortion laws, like in Texas, from a pro-life perspective, because she is pro-life.
Right. This is why I wanted to mention this, because I noticed that this was a pro-life author writing for you, and then, you know, I see the value in what she's written, but obviously I would, if I were the editor, I would have some second thoughts about publishing a pro-life author. Not that people don't have a right to their opinions, but it's, you know, even if she's come to, I think, a good conclusion, I think the pro-life ideology is very pernicious, and even if she recognizes the perniciousness of it, which is what's the value.
I mean, that's
of
why I published it. She is saying this is a pernicious ideology.
Right. But it's still, you know, like if you, for example, were a TERF and you're like, well, I recognize the TERF movement is very bad. It, you know, it's still a different type of bigotry, but it's still, you know, it gives you pause. So I.
What do you think is bigoted in her piece? Because I didn't think there was anything bigoted in what she said.
No, not in the piece, but the pro-life movement is bigoted. It's you know.
I mean, so we're talking about two different things. So basically, Christina believes that like the fetus deserves rights. Mm-hmm. That's when she talks about pro-life, we can translate that as she believes the fetus deserves rights because she thinks the fetus is a human being.
Right. That is bigoted, I believe.
Okay, so that in itself is bigoted. I just want to clarify that versus the pro-life movement,
right,
which she argues is bigoted, and I think we all agree is bigoted. The actual movement is bigoted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is whether or not the fetus is a human being bigoted. I don't really see. Can you explain to me why you think that's a bigoted, like...
Because if from the moment of conception or at any point during pregnancy, you have less rights than part of your body, then you've taken away the rights of the person who is pregnant.
But no, that's a whole different thing. And I think that's something that Christina has argued in this piece, is that you can recognize that the fetus is a human being without saying that the mother should lose rights.
I don't think you can.
How? I don't understand.
You should not have the right to abuse your child. You should not have the right to feed your child alcohol, for example. That would be abuse. A pregnant woman should be able to smoke and drink. I don't think it's a healthy choice. It can be done in, you know, healthy in moderation, But once the fetus has rights, you can no longer be able to do that without abusing this person.
Well, this is what makes the whole thing very complicated, right? And we can see a parallel actually between the issue of like the unborn and the end of life stuff that's rolling out in the UK and everything with the MAID in Canada. I would like to get an article about that out actually soon. I need to find somebody to write a good article about the MAID assisted dying stuff. Mm-hmm. Because this is, I think, going to be a place where politics is really taking us. Like, we're going to have to deal with the beginning and end of life stuff. I think that's going to be a major debate. So I wanted to publish Christina. I don't think she said anything bigoted. I don't think she's a bigot, at least not to my knowledge. I wouldn't publish somebody that's a bigot. And at New International, we have an editorial board with ethics rules about that. So if Christina turns out to be a bigot or whatever, then I won't work with her, you know, in the future. But I have no reason to believe that she's a bigot.
We just have a little bit of a difference of opinion about this.
Because I don't see there's no problem in saying like, the fetus is a human being and deserves rights, but the mother gets priority and her rights, you know, as a independent, autonomous adult, and the fetus being dependent on her means that the fetus's rights are somewhat limited, right? And that's just a reality. That's like a material reality. The fetus is fully dependent on the mother, right?
Yeah, and it gets into a question of rights. And I do think she gets into these more metaphysical questions in the piece as well.
Yeah. So I think... like in France, for example, we have a different abortion compromise than in the US, which is basically you can have whatever you want. You can basically do whatever you want vis-a-vis abortion, et cetera, up until like, I don't remember the exact thing, but it's basically the first trimester. I can look up the actual law in a minute if you want the exact dates. But after this point, you have to have two doctors agree to perform an abortion. And it's not difficult to get the two doctors to agree. And the doctors aren't facing like life in prison or capital punishment or something if they get it, quote unquote, wrong, right? But this is like a compromise that nobody really challenges. Like, this has been inscribed into the Constitution. Even people on the right, it's like kind of weird. Like, Marine Le Pen supported making this constitutional. So it's a sort of marginal right-wing position to say that this compromise is bad. And I think if such a compromise was done in the U.S., if you had like universal healthcare and blah, 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 that something like that would basically end the big abortion debates, right?
No.
Instead of having on the one hand a sort of free for all and on the other hand a kind of insane, like the Texas situation is crazy. Like people are going to get
saying,
killed.
You're saying that if there was a two doctor approval system that would end the abortion debate in the United States?
No, but it's like it provides a political framework where you say like basically you have elective abortion enshrined in law until X date.
That's right? Already what we
and
have.
After X, well, then after X date, you have to have two doctors or whatever approve it.
That's already that was already the status quo.
You mean before Roe?
Before Roe was overturned.
Yeah, before Dobbs overturned Roe. I'm saying right now this is not the situation, right? So you'd have to have some kind of national compromise where the debate is settled on at what point do we have this sort of limit or whatever, because otherwise people aren't going to accept, you know, absolutely. I think it's going to be completely impracticable, the state by state setup. You have to have some kind of national.
It isn't practical. Deal. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that sort of framework wouldn't solve anything because the pro-life movement is specifically oriented towards issues that are far beyond simply question of the rights of the fetus. That's really not what it's about. It's about
for the movement, yeah.
Patriarchal domination. And yeah, I don't know what's in this author's heart. I don't know where like she came to this position.
But you read the piece.
But she doesn't talk too much and I didn't read the entire piece.
Okay.
It was very long. And so a lot of it was about like philosophy and like the, you know. So I didn't read everything, but I does she say in the piece where she came, like how was it she came to be pro-life?
No, she doesn't talk about why she's pro-life, but basically she says in the piece, she says that she is, pro-life, but she has a lot of pro-choice friends and she reads all of their publications and, you know, she respects them. And basically the idea being that for her, the main issue is the pro-life movement is just sort of hopelessly corrupt and people shouldn't be a part of it.
But how can you say you respect someone who's a murderer?
Well, I don't think she would say that because it's not that simple, right? Like if you read in her piece, she talks about the sort of interconnected, and like think about it this way. If at conception, right, if at like when the sperm meets the egg, right, there's a lot of fertilized ova or whatever that don't make it, that just get flushed out. Like how do we think about that, right? How do we think about that all the way through the point where like my wife is pregnant right now, she's going to give birth next month, right? And like I have seen the little boy's face, mm-hmm. right? For me, he's clearly a human being. And like if I were to harm him intentionally, I would have I would be very, you know, if somebody else harmed him, I would be extremely upset, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the other end of it, like when you're just having sex or whatever, you don't think about these things. You don't like, so there's this progression, right? And there's also progression of the dependence between the two, where at the beginning, it's so wholly dependent that you don't even see it. You don't even perceive it, it being the unborn life. And at the end, well, it comes out and now it's a separate being. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So like clearly there's a progression there, right? If somebody came and like beat up my wife intentionally to try to kill our unborn child, like we would think of him as a murderer, mm-hmm. right? But if you're just simply taking the morning after pill and like it to me, it's just not real and I would like challenge people philosophically to like really believe that somebody taking Plan B is a murderer. Just like really believe that. I don't think anybody can really believe that without making themselves crazy.
Well, let's try to remove it from congratulations, by the way. I'm very happy for you and your wife.
Thank you.
Try to remove it from that situation. Let's say hypothetical other situation where a woman is 7 months pregnant and she gets wasted and has a miscarriage. Is she a murderer?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing is,
why
I
not?
Think what